This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You've reached the edge of the world. Today on Dreamland, we're going to start with Trish McGregor, who is an expert astrologer and has worked on the future and coronavirus as seen through the lens of astrology. Trish has been on Dreamland many times, and she was, and Rob, her husband, were among the first people Anne contacted after she passed away. And at the end of our interview and discussion of the astrological significance and coronavirus, we'll talk very briefly about that, who those of you who don't know this wonderful story. Then we're going to be talking to Catherine Austin Fitz of the Solari Report. Remember, this interview with Catherine was recorded prior to the declaration of the pandemic and the subsequent disruptions in the markets and in our society in general. Still, much of it is surprisingly prescient and is always very, very interesting. Catherine can't be uninteresting. Trish McGregor started studying astrology when she was 17 years old, and by the late 1990s was publishing books on the subject. In 1999, she wrote a book for famed astrologer Sidney Omar about what to expect in the new millennium. For the next decade, she and her husband Rob co-authored the Sidney Omar Astrology Series. She now publishes monthly forecasts for the 12 signs on her blog, blog.synchrosecrets.com, works with private clients, and conducts workshops. She believes that astrology is an invaluable system of self-knowledge and a terrific divination tool. I think that it, like the I Ching, is a remnant of a lost science that understood pattern recognition very differently from the way we do now, and that both systems offer, to some degree, effective windows into understanding personality and seeing the greater probabilities that lie in the future. Now, quite a number of people are going to say, astrology, forget it. So, Trish, I think the best thing to do is to start by asking you if you think I'm on the right track, or is there anything to it in your experience?
Hi, Whitley.
Hi, Trish. How are you?
I'm good. I think it's really a shame that astrology has that kind of reputation, because it's an incredibly valuable tool. It's about patterns. You know, it's about the same types of patterns that you see in synchronicity, in any kind of divination system, from the I Ching to tarot cards to tea leaves in a cup. You know, and patterns are really what our lives are about. So when this coronavirus first came on the scene, I thought, you know, and it wasn't all that serious, say, back at the end of February, in February. So I thought, okay, there's got to be a parallel to this somewhere. So I looked at what was going on astrologically, and for a long time in 2019, a lot of people were, I kept finding site after site about, oh my God, got to dread January 12th of 2020, we're going to have this exact conjunction of Saturn and Pluto. I thought, oh, all right, so what does that mean? Well, what it meant is Saturn, in astrology, governs physical reality. It governs structures, self-discipline, limitations, restrictions, and the status quo. And supposedly it teaches us through experience what we need in order to grow and evolve as human beings. Pluto, on the other hand, governs profound and permanent change, regeneration, obsession, destruction, and power. It also governs life after death, reincarnation, and good and evil. Even though it's no longer considered a planet by astronomers, astrologers ignore Pluto at their own peril. Okay, so this conjunction between Saturn and Pluto, let me backtrack a little bit. First of all, we had, on January 10th, we had a lunar eclipse. And that seemed to open the door astrologically to a new decade, because this year is also going to end up with another eclipse, and both of them are in the sign of Cancer. Cancer rules home, family, nurturing, your inner being, your inner world. And also eclipses often bring news. So the day after this eclipse, on January 11th, the Chinese released the genetic data on the virus. So that was a piece of news that really wasn't well circulated. All right, on January 12th, Saturn and Pluto were exactly conjunct at 23 degrees in Earth sign Capricorn. Now, Capricorn rules, among other things, government, structures, the status quo, and its sign is ruled by Saturn. So these two planets have been approaching an exact conjunction since late 2019, when they were just about 7 degrees apart. Then on the 12th, the conjunction between the two became exact to the degree and minute. And to me, what it presaged was a collapse of the status quo, which is pretty much what's happened. It could have been an actual terrorist attack. Instead, the terrorist arrived as this virus. And Pluto exposes what's hidden beneath the surface. And that's what it did here. It exposed how woefully unprepared this country was for an attack like this, because structures that had been in place to deal with the health crisis had been dismantled. So that's where this started, with the eclipse, then with this conjunction of Saturn and Pluto. So anyway, I went back and looked through my ephemeris, which lists all the different transits and stuff that the planets do. And I found that there were some eerie parallels to the Spanish influenza of 1918. So let me get into what the parallels are. This involves Jupiter and Pluto. I already talked about Pluto. Now, Jupiter is normally the great benefic planet. Okay, it rules justice, foreign countries and people, rules publishing, rules our worldviews, spiritual beliefs, faith, and it governs abundance, prosperity, luck, and expansion. So when it conjuncted Pluto, the expansion part of this means that the virus expanded worldwide. Okay, and because this occurred during the Spanish influenza pandemic, 1918-19, I started looking at what the astrological parallels were. All right, according to the CDC website, Spanish influenza in the U.S. was first identified in military personnel in the spring of 1918. Although there is no universal consensus regarding where the virus originated, it spread worldwide during 1918 to 1919. And it's estimated that about 500 million people, or one-third of the world's population, became infected with the virus. Okay, the first wave happened in the spring and was generally mild. The sick who experienced typical flu-like symptoms, chills, fever, fatigue, usually recovered after several days, and the number of reported deaths was low. But a second highly contagious wave of influenza appeared with a real vengeance in the fall of that same year, and victims died within hours or days of developing symptoms. So in just 1 year, 1918, the average life expectancy in America plummeted by a dozen years. Okay, in the spring of 1918, Jupiter and Pluto were approaching a conjunction in Cancer, and people who got sick, quote, recovered in a couple days. But by August 1918, when the Spanish flu was killing people who caught it, you know, like a matter of hours or days, the conjunction was exact to the minute and second and degree. So when that happened, death really slammed into overtime. In 1919, the two planets were still closely together within 1 or 2 degrees of each other, so technically conjunct. But finally, in August 1919, Jupiter changed signs and entered Leo. But the pandemic continued into December 1920, when Jupiter was in Virgo and Pluto was still languishing in Cancer. Okay, so now skip ahead to 2020. In late January, Jupiter was approaching a conjunction with Pluto. They were still 10 degrees apart. By late February, they were only 5 degrees apart. And from an article in The Atlantic, on the last day of February, the CDC reported that 15 Americans had tested positive for COVID-19. In mid-March, the two planets were only 2 degrees apart. Now, from March 29th to April 6th, the two planets will be conjunct to the degree. But the conjunction to the minute, which is what I think is the important part, happens on April 4th, in a few days, June 30th, and again on November 12th. So, but throughout these months, the conjunctions are close. So the bad news here is I think if these patterns hold true for 2020, I think that we're in for a really long haul with this thing. However, the good news is that on December 20th, Jupiter enters Aquarius. Now, that's the sign of the visionary, the rebel. It's the sign of how you find your own individuality. So my hope is that the Aquarius part of this equation indicates the dawn of a new era. Maybe the age of Aquarius that they've been singing about since the 60s. But I think it also depends on what we meaning humanity, as a collective, do now. So that's my take on it.
Now, when you say we do what we do now, what can you dimensionalize that a little bit?
Well, in other words, I think, you know, instead of so much divisiveness in the world, we have to come together as a people. You know, otherwise this thing is just, it's going to be the end, you know. I don't know if it's going to be the end times, but so many people are going to die.
You know, that's the one thing that it's interesting you bring it up, because it's the one thing I've gotten from the visitors about this who have been strikingly silent about it. And that is that it is an opportunity for community, mm-hmm. which is why on Unknown Country, I am building the community aspects of it as fast as I can, because we need to come together as communities all over the world. It's small
Absolutely.
Communities, big communities, but this is the only thing that can save us. The people who infect us with divisiveness we've got to learn to ignore them, and we have got so much divisiveness and so much artificial dissatisfaction in our world. Mm-hmm. We have to see beyond it and think to ourselves, this person, this company, or this advertiser, or this news politician is teaching me to be divisive, to be angry.
Right.
But why? Is it real? And the usual answer is no, it's not. We're letting ourselves be exploited. We have to change that whole paradigm and find ourselves in the community of man, or
right.
there will soon be no community of man. That's
there won't be any men.
No, this, or women. I mean, but that
or
is
women.
Yeah, that is that business of community is the one message I've gotten. I've asked for information about the virus, for information about how long this will last, for information about what to do about it, health related things, and so forth and so on, and that. That really has not come, but what has come is this vision of community.
Well, that's why I think this transit of Jupiter into Aquarius on December 20th, 21st, depends on where you live in the world, is really important, because Saturn has also moved out of Capricorn into Aquarius. Now, it's going to retrograde back and into Capricorn for a while, like in July, I think. But then it also goes into Aquarius in December and stays there for the next 2.5 years, whereas Jupiter's transit through Aquarius lasts about 12 to 13 months, depends on how long the retrogrades are. But that's important, because these are two of the planets that have created the problem, you know, when they were in Capricorn. So what we're seeing, I think, is basically what we're going to see is the collapse, more of a collapse of the status quo initially. So it's going to be like you say, people are going to have to band together in communities, help their neighbors. You know, if you have elderly people in your community, offer to go grocery shopping for them or to do something for them.
Yes.
And that's where it starts. So I really think that this pandemic is a teacher.
It can be a teacher. And uh-huh. and it just it is amazing how much the world has changed in just a few months. And
Just in a few weeks, a matter of days.
Yeah, and changing still every day. Well, that's why I'm doing a weekly meditation session on live YouTube, and a weekly one on our Zoom client for our subscribers, and we have weekly chats, and you know we're building this mm-hmm. into a much more active community. Now, speaking of communities, your community happens on blog.synchrosecrets.com. And that on that, you can find all of Trish and Rob's books. You can find their podcast, and I believe I'm going to be on your podcast.
You are. We're not sure when you're going up yet, but it's going to be one. It's probably going to be this. It's going to be the Sunday after next.
Sunday after next. Okay. Yeah. Well, that would be. Let me just.
What date is that?
Well, we're going to look at the date and find out, because that would be Sunday, the 12th of.
Yeah. Okay.
It's Easter Sunday.
Oh. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, well, that's appropriate.
Yeah,
somehow, or perhaps not. I don't know.
No, that's perfect.
Yeah.
Well, you know, this also fits. All of this also fits into another pattern, which I spent a lot of time looking at the history of astrology. But what I noticed was, the election in November is probably going to be really screwed up, just as it was in 2000, because there's another pattern here. Okay, on November 7th, 2000, Mercury, the planet of communication, had been retrograde since mid-October, first in Scorpio, then it slipped back into Libra. And when it's retrograde, it means it appears to be moving backward relative to Earth. Okay, so at 9:20 p.m. that night, it turned direct in Libra. That means it was stationary. It was retrograde, starting to turn direct. So the potential for miscommunication at the stationary point is really strong. Okay, for that date, the station caused bedlam because it was election day. Okay, astrologers were predicting chaos for that night. Sure enough, 7:49, NBC decided they had enough data from exit polls in Florida, and Tom Brokaw called the state for Al Gore. With Florida's 25 electoral votes at the time, it meant he'd won the election. However, shortly after 10 p.m., less than an hour after Mercury had turned direct, Brokaw backtracked and said that Bush had won the state in the election. Well, everybody knows what happened after that. The butterfly ballots in this county where I live in the Supreme Court. Okay, we have a repeat coming up on November 3rd, this election, and Mercury will once again be stationary in Libra. And it's going to turn direct at 12:50 p.m. Eastern Time, and at 9:50 a.m. I'm sorry, 12:50 p.m. Eastern and 9:50 a.m. Pacific. Now, in addition, Mercury is going to be squaring. That's a 90-degree angle that's challenging to Pluto, Saturn, and Jupiter. Now, the first square indicates schemes, extreme tactics. The second square suggests the possibility of communication difficulties, rigid thinking, the status quo. The third one, Mercury square Jupiter, suggests wild exaggerations, errors in judgment, and a big mess with no clear winner. So it's going to be a repeat pattern. And that's if there's an election at all, because who knows where we're going to be with this thing in November.
Interesting. Yeah, who knows? Well, I think that the election is going to be thrown into a cocked hat, probably, because the likelihood is that, not astrologically, but just on the science as I understand it, this will abate in the summer and then come back. And by November, it's probably going to be back.
Just like it was in 1918.
Right, exactly.
And the flu,
Exactly.
These patterns repeat.
And it may be, often these viruses come back in a milder form, but not always.
Right.
They can come back, as the flu did, the 1918 flu did, in a much more virulent form. So we just don't know what will happen then.
No, we don't.
Anyway,
this is as far as I've got in the astrological stuff, and it depressed me so much I thought, okay, I need to go find something better to do.
Well, I think
But I keep trying to look at what you're talking about, though, in terms of this is a tool, it's an opportunity for people to come together. It really
right.
is.
It
because
really
we're
is.
We're stronger as a humanity than we are as separate individuals, as a collective consciousness.
Right. Well, Trish, I'm going to we're coming. We're going to I thought we would do this for 20 minutes. It'll be up on Dreamland. Today is the 1st of April, so it'll be up on this weekend show on April the 3rd. And folks, go to blog.synchrosecrets.com, and she's got it all laid out there in detail in a section called Astrology and the Coronavirus. And you can also click through to their newest fiction and nonfiction books, their podcast, and all kinds of stuff. It's a fascinating blog. And
thank you.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, Trish and I and her husband, Rob, have been friends for a long time, and Trish and Ann were friends. And, of course, if some of you probably don't know this, but Trish was one of the people, and Rob were among the people.
And our dog.
And your dog, who Ann contacted first after she passed on. And this happened just a few days later. And I tell the story briefly again, Trish.
Ann died on August 11th, and I heard about it on August 12th. So I was writing Whitley an email about how sorry I was. And as I got to the part about what I was trying to say was, you know, that if you need anything, just let us know. And as soon as I wrote the word no, there was a tremendous explosion in our family room that sounded like, you know, a transformer exploding. My God, Rob and I leaped up from our chairs. The dog jumped off the couch. I mean, we thought, we didn't know what to think. Had the TV exploded or what? Walk out in the family room and nothing's happened. So I ran back to my computer and I said, Whitley, I think Ann was here. Because, and he wrote me back and he said, she sure as hell is active on the other side.
Yeah. Well, at that point, I was already getting contacted by other friends as well, that Ann was literally talking to them in their ears and telling them to call me. And apparently she tried that with you and it didn't work, because another thing that I heard right during that same period was Ann saying, it looks like you're all intentionally ignoring us.
Oh, God.
And I have a feeling you were busy with your email. You ignored her, and she Annie was not known not to have a temper. She was, she could get pretty mad at times. And, that's what I think happened.
I had a recording of that. I mean, it was just so shocking.
Oh, yeah, it must have been. Well,
yeah, it really was.
Anyway, she's very much with me now, and I think it's largely Anne who is involved in my work now, frankly. And she's, the last time that she woke me up to meditate at 3 o'clock in the morning was 3 o'clock this morning. And if I don't wake up, I am generally waked up. Two nights ago, I woke up at 2 and I thought, well, I'm awake, I'll do it. So I went out and did the meditation and went back to bed at about 2:30. 3 o'clock, I was waked up to do the meditation. Whoever it is, and I think it's Anne, hadn't been around. And so I had to do it again.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, but at least you didn't have a transformer explode in your living room.
Right. Well, not so far, but at least, but what a blessing to have this in my life. And folks, I'm telling you about it, not because I know it's probably not in most people's lives, but just know that it is real and it is in one life.
And it's possible.
And it's possible. And Trish, thank you so much
for being
with us. I think it's a richly insightful discussion of the virus and astrology, as I knew it would be. And blog.synchrosecrets.com. And, you know, there's a lot of very interesting stuff on there. We've talked about a lot of the books that they are selling there. So if any of their books strike your fancy, you can't go wrong. Trish McGregor, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Whitley.
Thank you for being on Dreamland.
You take care.
Next up on this extended edition of Dreamland, Catherine Austin Fitz. Subscribers, there will be a meditation and discussion in our Zoom video room on Saturday. That's tomorrow at 11 o'clock in the morning, and every Saturday morning at 11 Pacific time. To get to the room, log in, click on Subscriber Home, and down toward the bottom of the list of things you can do, you will see Zoom video. Enter there, and from there you will be able to go to our Zoom meeting. If you would like to do things like change your name as it appears in the meeting, or change your profile picture, you need to start an account at zoom.us. It's very simple and it's free to do. And then you will be able to make those changes after you log into the meeting. And as always, I'd like to remind you that the beautiful bumper music that we use on Dreamland is Ray Lynch's O of Pleasure. Amazingly enough, it was chosen a quarter of a century ago by Ramona Bell, Art's first wife, who helped him start this program, which has been going on every single week since.
Whitley's new book, A New World, is getting great reviews. American cosmic author Diana Walsh Pasulka says, "Enter this risky new world and leave empowered." New York Times reporter Leslie Keen says, "Riveting. I couldn't put it down." Amazon reviewers are calling it life-changing, mind-opening, the first real description of what contact is like and will be like. Don't miss A New World. As Professor Jeffrey Kripal says in his preface, this book is contact. Get A New World today. Available as a paperback, a hardcover, and an ebook wherever books are sold. And as an audiobook read by Whitley on audible.com.
Catherine is the founder and director of Solari.com, the Solari Report. You can reach her at Solari.com. She has extensive experience in the financial markets and understands finance and economy very deeply. You can get the Solari Report. It offers access to private briefings via weekly audio with Catherine Austin Fitz and her guests. And it is an extraordinary service, a resource, I should say. Then I get it and I really love it. And Catherine, all I can say is, with your wealth of experience, I'm very glad to have you at a time like this when the markets are so shaky. We're looking at coronavirus and all kinds of odd disconnect, geopolitical problems and asymmetrical disconnects, I should say. Welcome to Dreamland.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And in that long list of things you described for my resume, you forgot one of the most important ones, and that is I'm a member of the Whitley Strieber Fan Club.
Well, okay, that makes I find that terribly impressive. Thank you. Okay, now where we are right now is the markets are shaky all over the world. The coronavirus fears have spread widely. Now, and that doesn't show any immediate sign of changing. However, these viruses do tend to back off in the summer, and it will get warm in the next month or so. So, what do you see coming, if I may ask you that to start?
Well, there's no way to tell, because I think what I see is the world dividing politically into many different win-lose positions. And I think if the markets traded off for any reason, it's the concern that the players would rather fight than collaborate on keeping the economy strong. And, I don't see this as much of a phenomena coming or connected to the virus as a phenomena connected to dirty warfare and too many win-lose positions sort of on the global chessboard. Now, if you look at how far the market has run up, Whitley, it's interesting. I did my money in markets commentary based on the Wednesday close this week. And after a year that was as glorious as last year, being down 2% as of March would be no big deal. You know, to a certain extent, we've gotten addicted to the stairway to heaven, which is, you know, thanks to the central banks, the market goes up a little bit every day forever. And the reality is that 2% off for the year compared to the, you know, an incredible increase last year is not even a deep correction. So I'm not that nervous about the market. I'm very nervous about the fact that we don't have markets. We have, you know, markets don't clear with price now. They clear with war. And, if you look at the amount of dirty warfare going on around the world, it's quite remarkable anything gets done.
Yeah. What do we have then?
Well, I think you know, for 500 years we've had a central banking warfare model, and that model basically worked in the G7 developed world because we subsidized ourselves by basically using a fiat currency and military system to harvest the second and third world. Now with globalization, you know, the harvesting has turned more to our own citizens than, you know, so we've kind of had to reallocate the harvesting globally. And with that, you have a group of players who've gotten control of sort of invisible technology and digital technology. And they are using it to centrally control resources. And right now you have a push, I think, in the G7 nations to centralize further using what Patrick Wood calls technocracy and to shift the currency system into an integrated smart grid with digital currency and digital technology. And it's really a vision of complete control and very much in violation of any traditional system, whether Christianity, all the way to the Nuremberg principles, and any fundamental values and laws of Western civilization. You know, so, I mean, it literally is beginning to feel in parts of the West like we're dealing with a, you know, demonic or occult takeover. It's quite extreme. And, I think part of what's happening is you have players who are moving very quickly to take advantage of digital technology and leaving the crowd behind. And we have to go through a very difficult period because you have such a fundamental win-lose relationship between so many of the parties. I don't know if you've been watching the U.S. presidential campaign.
Oh, yes.
But it's very interesting to see, if you look at some of the players who've been instrumental in engineering the financial coup. So there's basically $21 trillion missing from federal accounts and then $24 to $29 trillion missing on the bailouts or disappeared on the bailouts. So you've basically raped the federal credit for $50 trillion over the last couple of decades. And if you look at the people who are instrumental to doing that and you listen to them, listening to Mike Bloomberg, who I put right at the heart of that group, what you realize is they've gotten away with so much that they've literally forgotten what reality is. And they've been able to successfully use mind control technology to kind of brainwash America enough that they've forgotten what reality is. And it's scary. I mean, you kept watching Bloomberg and thinking, could a man that smart and that wealthy be that completely stupid? You know, the only other thing I can think of is it was just imperative to continue the distraction. You know, the impeachment worked to distract for a while, so Bloomberg thought he'd spend $500 million and get everybody distracted from facing what's really going on inside the federal credit. I mean, here's the big question. Are you familiar with the FASB Statement 56 that the U.S. adopted at the end of 2018?
I am, and that was going to be my next question.
Well, here's my question. You know, FASB 56 was basically the Congress and the White House getting together right in the middle of the Kavanaugh hearings. They snuck it through while everyone was distracted with the Kavanaugh hearings. But basically what they said is, we reserve the right to ignore the Constitution and all the financial management laws and regulation and keep secret books. And not only can we keep secret books, but we can do it by a process and according to decisions by people who are also secret. So when you look at the federal financial statements, they're completely and utterly meaningless, especially when you combine them with the other classification laws. And I should say, we've written up all the legal issues at missingmoney.solari.com. So there's a wealth of information for anybody, you know, whether taxpayer, citizen, or investor who wants to understand. Now, I'm going to grossly oversimplify, Whitley, but what this means is, they can sell $1 trillion of treasuries a year, you know, and they do. They roll over, you know, we roll over more than the entire federal debt every year. And so they can issue trillions of dollars and all that money can disappear out the back door. And no one's the wiser because they've taken the position they don't have to produce you know, they can take a part of the books and make them secret. So for all you know, the biggest buyer of pension of Treasury securities is pension funds. Our pension funds are buying Treasury securities, and that money is disappearing to tell me.
Well, exactly. That's the next question. Where is the enormous amount of money? Where is it going?
I think it's going to what I call privatization on the just do it method. In other words, this is regime change in America. So rather than killing the president, you know, and installing a new president, you simply take all the assets and money and move them out of government into private hands. And then you turn around to everybody and say, there's no money. I don't know. Every week for the missing money, we do a poster, and they're really fun. We have a great, go to missingmoney.blair.com and then click on My 21-2020 campaign. You know, they're all designed to help people in the elections and at the town hall meetings ask questions. So last week it was Mike Bloomberg, and the question basically was, you know, there's $21 trillion missing from the federal government and $29 trillion missing on the bailouts, and we know that because your business was providing data to Wall Street. So we know you saw the $50 trillion go by, but now you say we can't afford Social Security and Medicare. How does that work, Mike?
Yeah, they all know that. Well, they know that their programs cannot – I mean, I'm not even going to – let's – yeah, how does that work?
Exactly. So, you know, I mean, it's so funny. Do they think we can't count? In other words, that's $50 trillion. If you look at all the studies of the U.S. pension funds as of a year ago, they said they were underfunded by $5 trillion. Well, we gave the banks $29 trillion for the bailout. Why is it a problem to arrange $5 trillion for the pension funds? It's not. The notion that we don't have money for any of these things, it's a complete mirage.
Yeah.
It's a complete, yeah.
But what I don't understand is, yes, why is it going on? What's the point? There's something going on. There's someone somewhere is siphoning off vast amounts of money. You know.
Exactly.
Years
exactly.
ago.
And they have been since for many, many decades now.
For many decades. Well, years ago, I was involved. The Senate had formed a select committee, an intelligence committee, back in the 90s, to research UFOs and the Roswell business, because the then congressman from New Mexico, one of them, Stephen Schiff, was asking questions of the General Accounting Office, and it was kind of on the table. And so they ended up asking me questions and really kind of threatening me to subpoena me if I didn't answer them. And they were basically trying to get me to form questions that they could ask the National Security Agency that would be questions that would trap it, which wasn't something I wanted to do, because I really don't want to get into – I'd far rather be in trouble with the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence than the NSA, because senators
right.
come and go, but the NSA is forever. So I was being pretty coy, and I finally said to this one of these guys, not one of the staffers, not the senators, look, go for the money. If you look down that hole and find where the money is moving, you will succeed in finding out what's going on. About 2 weeks later, he calls me and says, listen, we found an entire Air Force installation that is not funded by the United States. It's not on the Pentagon's roster at all. It is, and yet they sent someone there, and it looks like an Air Force base. The people on it are being paid with Treasury checks the normal way. Everything looks perfectly normal. Only the money's not coming out of the United States Treasury and not coming through the Pentagon, and the base is not controlled by the Pentagon. And I
right.
said, well, where is it? And so forth. He wouldn't answer those questions. And then
if you look at the $21 trillion went missing.
$21 trillion, wait a minute, it buys a lot of air bases. Go ahead.
Yeah. But as it went missing, it ballooned in the offshore, the offshore havens ballooned by approximately the same amount. You know, and it is very possible, Whitley, to create an endowment where you run a private, so if I want to privatize the U.S. government, I move, $50 trillion of assets into an endowment. The endowment generates, $5 trillion a year, $2.5 trillion a year of income every year. And with that income, I proceed to run a government on a private basis.
Now, one of the things that's always mystified me is billionaires. And I know some billionaires very well. Unfortunately, they don't support my website because, people always say, if he's so rich, why doesn't he help? I said, because that's why he's so rich. And unfortunately, I don't know any like Bill Gates.
They're not permitted. In other words, you become a billionaire.
Yeah.
But it's not your money. You're an agent. You're not a principal. And you're only allowed to, channel that money as the system tells you. And you don't have permission to do something which is antithetical to the system and where the system wants to go.
One of these guys...
It's not really your money.
No, it's not. And in fact, your life isn't your own either. One of these guys, 25 years ago now, got caught in a kiddie porn situation. And he was not arrested. He was entrapped instead. And I thought to myself that the whole thing from the very beginning had been entrapment. They'd been out there to put this guy on a leash, and they did it.
Right.
And Free Dreamlander, speaking of leashes, these next few minutes are your leash because you're going to have to listen to some commercials. I wish you didn't have to do that. Instead, support unknowncountry.com. And if you are a billionaire out there who's got a free couple of bucks – well, we could use your support, and we're almost alone out on this plank, and the ocean below is very stormy. We'll be right back.
Whitley's new book, A New World, is getting great reviews. American cosmic author Diana Walsh-Pasulka says, "Enter this risky new world and leave empowered." New York Times reporter Leslie Keene says, "Riveting. I couldn't put it down." Amazon reviewers are calling it life-changing, mind-opening, the first real description of what contact is like and will be like. Don't miss A New World. As Professor Jeffrey Kripal says in his preface, this book is contact. Get A New World today. Available as a paperback, a hardcover, and an ebook wherever books are sold. And as an audiobook read by Whitley on audible.com.
My summer appearances are as follows. I will be at the Ozark Mountain UFO Conference, April 10 to 12, OzarkUFOConference.com, the McMinnville UFO Conference, May 14 to 16, that's UFOFest.com, at Contact in the Desert, May 28 to June the 1st, that's ContactInTheDesert.com, the Omega Institute, in July 17th to 20th, doing a course with Dr. Jeffrey Kripal. That's eomega.org. Then I'll be back on the Pine Ridge Lakota Sioux Reservation, July 23 to 27, at the Thunderheart Center for the Arts in Wasta, South Dakota, at the Consciousness and Contact Conference. For questions and additional information, please contact Mia Ferroleto. That's MIA.FEROLETO@gmail.com. Last but not least by any means, I'll be at the Lilydale Assembly in upstate New York. That's the Assembly of the Spiritualist Church of America. You can find them at LilydaleAssembly.org. That's August 28 to 29.
In 2015, Whitley Strieber entered a whole new level of contact and his new book, A New World, tells the powerful and revealing story of what's been happening. Read about contact experiences unlike you have ever heard described before. Learn about the breakthroughs in communication that are developing right now. Experience the wonder of seeing into a mirror universe. The thrill of discovering the close encounter experience in an entirely new way. And learn the secret of how Whitley has built a very real and ongoing relationship with our otherworldly visitors. One Amazon reviewer says, a significant document of human empowerment. Another, one mind-bending, reality-shifting read. Another, outstanding. Get A New World today, available as a paperback, a hardcover, and an ebook wherever books are sold, and as an audiobook read by Whitley on audible.com.
As always, Dreamland's theme music is The O of Pleasure from Ray Lynch's beautiful album, Deep Breakfast, available at raylynch.com. We're talking to Catherine Austin Fitz, one of my favorite thinkers. Her website is home.solari.com. You can go there. You can get involved with the Solari Report, Solari Updates, which I believe are free weekly email updates, well worth your time. Now, where I was going, Catherine, was to the Jeffrey Epstein scandal. Because I've known about this stuff. I mean, I'm far from that world, but you hear things,
right.
You know. I've known that there was something going on.
Well, the control file system has been going on for, you know, centuries. But there's
right.
No doubt, once the national security state kicked in 47 and 49, they took control files to a whole new digital database wonderland. And Jeffrey Epstein was certainly part of that. If you're going to steal as much money from the federal government as they've stolen, you need a major control file and sex slave trafficking network. You know, that's just practical money.
Well,
if you're going to launder $21 trillion out of the federal government, you need Jeffrey Epstein.
Well, someone stole his list. Someone stole all those videos that were made in his townhouse and on his island, and all the people on them now belong to whoever has possession of that material.
Well, but they belong, from the beginning, they belong to the people he worked for, and he got fired, and, you know, and they maintained their assets.
But I wonder who he worked for, because I also wonder why he got fired, because things were going along just swimmingly. I walked past that townhouse and every once in a while with friends. We used to laugh about it. It was just a joke. I mean, no joke if you got caught in it, but or you were interested in those, what he had to offer there, which certainly I'm not.
It's very simple. Once SB-56 was adopted, he was a dead man. Very simple.
Yeah.
Once you adopt SB-56, you can steal $21 trillion without control file. He was no longer needed. He'd been replaced. They had re-engineered him out of it. You've had a financial coup. Now you're in the consolidation. All the people who were critical to helping you steal the $21 trillion are now expendable. They're gone. You've adopted SASB-56. You don't need complex money laundering networks anymore.
I guess my question is, why does somebody want to own these people? And there are a lot of them, apparently. I mean, Prince Andrew is apparently one of them, and just the tip of the iceberg. But here's the weirdest part. They went into this house in Manhattan, which was studded with cameras, and you could not have not known that. And, I mean, I take exception to the Windsors, because they're not geniuses. Let me put it that way. It's possible that Prince Andrew could have gone in there and not understood what was going on. But most of those people that would go in there are real sharp people, and they would have known for certain what was going on there. And yet they did it anyway. And were they?
Well, because you think you're in the club. You think you're protected and it can't happen to you. You know, so you're in the club and you're always going to be loyal. And so you don't anticipate, you know, and part of being in the club is to make sure they have a control file on you. You feel safe allowing that to happen because that's part of it.
Well, you know, when I was a kid, when Lyndon Johnson got into power, he had acquired, he was connected in a minor way with my family. One of my uncles was Attorney General of Texas for many years and then was head of the Democratic Party at that time. And so I heard things. And one of the things that was being very merrily bandied about was the fact that Lyndon had 8mm film of what was described as J. Edgar Hoover dancing around in a dress. And apparently he was involved and he was apparently gay or some equivalent thereof. And once Johnson got that, he also got with it all of Hoover's secret files. And of all, because Hoover now was owned by Johnson. So, and then he used that in his political life and as president and ended up destroying his own presidency, perhaps out of hubris, or I don't know quite why he stayed in Vietnam as long as he did, but in any case, someone, and my point is this, someone somewhere now has a large amount of power, or did they always? Was Jeffrey Epstein just a front?
Well, I think what happened was you had a real explosion in the late 70s and then during Iran-Contra of the building of control files. But it went to a whole new level with digital technology because you could do the wealthy with sex slaves, but then you could do the government bureaucrats with pornography. So if you look at the networks that were really making a tremendous effort to network the invasion of America with control files. I just think they took it to a whole new level with digital technologies in the 90s. And remember, you had a combination not just of online pornography, but entrainment. So the internet and the World Wide Web really kick in 1996. You add entrainment with online pornography, and you can pretty much, whether industry or place, lock up a critical mass of control files in every place. And I think you have a combination of U.S. and Israeli intelligence who did a very, very clever job of that. And it was what gave them the ability to launder $21 trillion out of the U.S. government.
Now, the laundering, I know, for example, that an enormous number of files, a lot of files that were in a government, U.S. government facility, a warehouse in, I believe, St. Louis, which burned in right before the Freedom of Information Act went into force. A lot of the other files were moved to the EG&G Rotron facility in Woodstock, New York, and in the 80s, the late 80s, these truck after truck after truck would travel all night up the road past not far from where we live, to the point that the local newspapers were receiving complaints from citizens about these trucks going on and on up there. And what was happening is files that had been in the possession of the United States government in a number of different locations were being offloaded into private hands in the Iron Mountain facility underneath Woodstock and Rosendale and those little towns in upstate New York.
Right.
Now, why was that being done? And do you have any sense of what those files may have been?
Well, what I believe, based on what I've seen ordered into Iron Mountain, I always believed that the Rockefeller faction, you know, created a way of privatizing all the most valuable data in parts of the country. Now, I've never understood the full scope of the operation. I just know the particular things I've seen ordered into Iron Mountain. And I think it's quite extraordinary, the sort of privatization of the most valuable data and databases in the country.
Yeah, I think it's bizarre that it would happen that way, but it's because somebody is definitely afraid of that data getting into the public hands. Because now, you know, the government, in fact, the U.S. government's store of sensitive information has been literally hollowed out from the inside. It is no longer there.
Well, but I don't think the government's been hollowed out. I think that the government has been privatized. So you've taken the intellectual capital, you've taken the knowledge, you've taken the financial assets and other assets, and you've moved them out into private hands, and you've kept a shell going, and you keep it going so long as you can keep moving assets out. So think of this as a slow-moving, you know, I call it piratization. Privatization is when you take an asset private at fair market. When you transfer for free out the back door, that's piratization. And I think what you're watching is a change in control. You know, it's regime change by the just do it method. That's why I call it a coup d'etat. And it's better if everybody's left with, you know, fantasy that there's a government. But there's no sovereign government in the United States. The U.S. government doesn't have financial sovereignty, and it doesn't have information sovereignty. The president of the United States can't have a confidential phone call. You know, he's got intelligence agencies listening. You share it with 17 other intelligence agencies in the group and leak it all over the place.
Right. Well, we found that out when Donald Trump tried to have private phone calls. He's an innocent what we used to say when I was a kid. A baby in the cactus patch. That was it.
Well, you know, I didn't want to admit this when I was in Washington, but from watching what we've seen of the congressional sort of howdy doody show over the last 3 years, as well as the behavior of the Department of Justice, I've really come to the conclusion that a very significant portion of Congress and the Department of Justice bureaucracy live on a kickback system. And that the illegal transactions are, you know, much worse than I ever dreamed and are very systematized. You know, and that makes sense. If you're going to steal $21 trillion at the back door of the U.S. government, it's going to be, you know, you need more than just everybody having a controlled file from watching online pornography at work. You know, you need to be able to, you know, pay the ones who play ball a nice, sweet kickback system. And, of course, now that you've engineered many decades of asset forfeitures and civil money fines and penalties and criminal fines and penalties. You know, I think the reason they take the, you know, for example, JP Morgan Chase in the last, since 2002, has settled at $42 billion of settlements for illegal or unethical actions. But, you know, nobody ever goes to jail. And I think that's because when the money, you know, when the $42 billion rolls into places like the Department of Justice, everybody gets a personal kickback.
And, you know, you have to wonder, what is the point? There's so much more money involved than anyone could possibly use or need that you just, you know, you just wonder. You've got, well, like, for example, Richard Dolan talks about a hidden civilization. And while I am aware of the fact that there are certainly people in this world who know a lot more than the rest of us do, I don't see that. And yet, is it there?
Oh, I do. Yeah, I do.
How, tell us about it.
If you look at the money and you look at the underground bases, any sort of reasonable estimate of what's been built, and you look at the culture, you know, there are some great movies to help you see it. You're literally talking about a parallel world. You know, they've basically, think of the federal budget as the same as the family budget of the husband who has two families and one family doesn't know the other exists. You've now provided sufficient funds to literally fund and start a wholly separate and divorce culture, legal, financial system. And absolutely, I think that's what's happened.
Yeah, now,
I think
apparently.
I think it's hard to imagine because it's hard to envision the technology unless you're really educated about it or think about it. But if you've ever, you know, if you've ever looked at the sky with the night vision goggles to see the spaceships flying around, or I don't know if you've ever seen any of the films about how you know, if you're in a populated area, you put on the night vision goggles, you look up in the sky and it's like, wow, there's a lot going on up there that we weren't seeing.
That we don't see. That's very true,
so
folks.
If you look at everything going on in the sky that we, you know, that we don't normally see or we don't see, if you look at everything going on in the underground bases and underground transportation systems, it is a separate civilization. They've left.
I just want to stop for a moment, folks. What Catherine is talking about is if you get infrared sensitive lens or a camera or goggles and you are a telescope and you look up in the sky at night, in many places, you're going to see regular passages of things that are emanating infrared light that we cannot see on the ground, and they will be moving very fast, and there will be often a lot of them moving in formation.
Right.
You know, one of the places I've found where I see most frequently, oddly enough, is over San Diego. And what interests me about that, of course, is that the Nimitz videos were taken off San Diego, and I've heard rumors that there was an underwater base in a trench in the Pacific about 40 miles off the coast of Southern California off of San Diego. And so you have to wonder, you know, maybe we're looking at right at something there. And, you know, folks, if you do get that equipment and be patient with it, and if you're living in the right place, you'll see stuff all right. And in fact, practically anywhere. So
right.
You will. Free Dreamlanders, we need to take another little break here. We'll be right back with Catherine Austin Fitz. This is a brief excerpt from an interview with two contactees who had an 11-day close encounter experience in 1966 and are now willing to speak about it really for the first time. To hear their whole interview and many others, subscribe to unknowncountry.com. Here's the excerpt. Did you see the man's face?
Yes, actually that one is very clear to me. It was kind of longish, and he didn't look completely human, but because he had very, very thin hair, almost non-existent, but he was young. I believe that it was kind of blonde, and he was very tall, like at least six feet, and he was so thin that he looked kind of strange.
And what happened then?
Well, he wanted me to go with him. Or to stay with him. He wanted me to stay with him on the ship. And I'd been married for 6 months. And I wasn't about to go running off to stay on the ship.
Now, surely you want more. You must want more. And there is more. Not only this contactee interview, but many others, many of them just as extraordinary, on unknowncountry.com. Plus everything else that we offer, my audio books, the meditations, the talks on the key. William Henry's wonderful Revelation show in its entire run, Anne Streber's brilliant and magical Mysterious Powers, and so much more. Hours and hours of listening pleasure. Learn from the meditations on the site. Really learn, because they're real and they're valuable. Subscribe to unknowncountry.com right now. Go to unknowncountry.com. Click on the subscribe tab. We are running very low on new subscribers now, and that should not be. It should not be happening. So you do it. You go there and you do it today. We're talking to Catherine Austin Fitz. Her website, solari.com, home.solari.com. She is the author of the Solari Report. You can get Solari updates from her weekly. They are really very interesting, and you can get more deeply involved with her. She has had a very long history in government and finance. Could you tell us a little bit about your work in your work in the government, for example, back during the Bush administration?
Okay, well, I was Assistant Secretary of Housing in the first Bush administration. The Assistant Secretary of Housing runs the Federal Housing Administration, which is the largest insurer of mortgages in the world. At the time I was there, it was a portfolio of about $320 billion of mortgage insurance in force, and we originated about $50 to $100 billion of insurance every year. And it was divided into two primary parts. One was the single-family mortgage insurance fund, and then the other was multifamily and high risk. And I was chosen to run it because there was a scandal going on. What had been going on during the Reagan administration was pretty outrageous. Oliver North was quoted once as saying that HUD is the candy store of covert revenues. And if you look at what I cleaned up, boy, did they have fun in the Reagan administration. So I was sort of the dark horse candidate who had a reputation for being sort of I'd be good for cleanup. So I got brought in. And I immediately ran into the buzzsaw of Washington wanting to look like they were running it clean, but running it dirty. I used to have the Secretary of HUD call me into his office and say, this is going on and this is unbelievably corrupt. I want you to shut it down right away. And then he'd call my deputy in and he'd say, I just told Fitz to shut it down, make sure she fails. And that's because he needed me to be convincing, telling the New York Times that we're really shutting it down. But he needed to make sure that we didn't shut it down because the pork needed to continue to go out the back door. And, you had all sorts of these funny, amazing scenes. I'll never forget. I don't know if you've seen the movie Eyes Wide Shut, Stanley Kubrick's last film.
Yes. Absolutely, I did see it.
So you know the scene of the secret society in the Long Island mansion. Anyway,
right.
So I was in one meeting with the secretary, and he was giving all the regional administrators. At that time, there were 10 federal regions, and the regional administrator in California had done something that really irritated him, and he was screaming bloody murder at him. And the California regional administrator, in his defense, said, "But Mr. Secretary, I had to do it. It was the law." And the secretary went absolutely nuts. I mean, he literally had foam spitting out of the side of his mouth. And he said, "The law? The law? I don't have to obey the law. I report to a higher moral authority." And just as he said it, you could see, like, the field split and the scene from Eyes Wide Shut. And you realize, oh, right. Who's really, what is the governance system here? And you constantly saw that the people who worked for the other civilization, just thought our laws were a joke and they didn't have to follow them. I'll never forget, we had a general counsel who was particularly lawless. And I was in a meeting once, which had been called because the secretary wanted to do something which was truly a violation of the laws and was going to lose the fund billions and billions of dollars. And And I insisted on a meeting because I said, look, the secretary can overrule me, but under the law, you know, I can't do something that is, one, a violation of the law and will lose the fund tremendous amounts of money without a direct order from the secretary. Anyway, so we had this big meeting, and he was trying to get all the other political appointees to sort of cow me. And he was going around the room getting everybody to agree with him that his position was correct. And he got to the general counsel, who, and basically one of the things he was talking and doing was abrogating hundreds and hundreds of contracts. So the government had contracts with private companies, and we were just going to abrogate them. You know, we were just going to say, just tear them up and say, well, you know, we're not going to fulfill our contract. And so they get to the general counsel, and he says, I'm not going to use the F word, which is what he used, but he said, F them, by the time they win in court, we'll be gone.
Whitley Strieber became the host of Dreamland in 1998, and he's still the host today. One of the first podcasts, Dreamland has been built into the premier program of its kind, exploring the edge of science and reality. The show's archive on unknowncountry.com dates back to 2004. Dreamland is a treasure unique in the world.
At this point in this commercial, I used to say that you can't subscribe because we are still in our old website, but that has changed at last. UnknownCountry.com's new website is available. Go to UnknownCountry.com and take a look. It is beautiful. It offers a huge archive, weekly chats, a free message board, all kinds of great stuff. Whitley Strieber audiobooks for subscribers, and much, much more. New stuff coming on the site all the time. So go to unknowncountry.com, take a look, and really open your mind. How do you do that? By subscribing and exploring and having a great time.
Earthfiles.com is Linda Moulton Howe's great website, offering news of the edge of science and reality. Keep up with Linda's work every single day on earthfiles.com. A new world is coming. Whitley has just finished his book about what it's like to live with and communicate with the visitors. He's been doing this for the past 30 years, and since 2015, the intensity of it has exploded. So be among the first to know what living with them is really like and what it will be like for more and more of us in the future. A new world, unforgettable.
It's getting great reviews. Take a look on Amazon. It's available as a Kindle, as an ebook everywhere else, and as a paperback at Barnes & Noble and on Amazon, and also as a hardcover on Barnes & Noble and Amazon, and as an audiobook read by me on Audible.com. Yeah.
Meaning
we can do anything we please because
we don't have to obey the law. We don't have to obey the law. We can do whatever we want. We'll just steal it, take it. I'll never forget getting called into the secretary's office. We had a program called Preservation, which was the government had financed private developers building multifamily apartment buildings, and the funding required that they keep them below market rent for basically low-income people for the first 20 years. But the 20 years was up, and we either had to renew the subsidy or the developers could take the market rate. That was the contract. So I got called into a meeting, and it was two little assistants from the Heritage Foundation and the secretary. And the secretary says, we found a solution. And I said, fabulous. What is it? And he said, these greedy sewer rat developers have made tons of money. We're just going to expropriate the properties and keep them low rate. And the two little assistants from Heritage Foundation are grinning like, you know, we figured it out. And so the secretary said, what do you think? And I said, well, Mr. Secretary, I'm a Republican. And one of the reasons I'm a Republican is I believe in the sanctity of property rights. And where I come from, what you're suggesting is called communism. And if I'm not mistaken, you want to run for higher office and as a Republican. And my suggestion to you is I would not want to be considered a communist when I did. So I would not really, you know, consider this as a viable political option for you. And he said, oh, good point. You know, and he turned to the Little Heritage Associates and said, you know, never mind, that won't work. And one of them said, I told you not to call her. You always agree with her, and it ruins every good idea we have. And, you know, I walked out. I have to tell you, Atlantic, thinking, this place is not under adult supervision. You know, what is going on here? My favorite, another favorite one was Jim Rouse, who head of, you know, he'd run Rouse Company, but then he started the Enterprise Foundation. And David Maxwell, who ran Fannie Mae, had done a Rouse Maxwell commission on how to improve financing for housing in the country. And they were both Democrats. We were Republicans. And so the secretary wanted to do a new Republican housing bill, and he called in Maxwell and Rouse to get them on board. And so he was trying to talk him into what he was proposing. And David said, well, you know, we were proposing lots of decentralization, and we thought that's what Republicans, you know, want, is decentralization. But what you're proposing is highly centralizing the resources and the credit, and that makes us uncomfortable. Why would you want to centralize? And the Little Heritage Associates said, well, but we're here now, meaning now that we're in control of the central system, we want to centralize because then we control. And you're shaking your head thinking, oh my God. Everybody was always trying to control every dime, because the more money you could pump out, the more campaign contributions you could get.
Right.
Kind of a downward spiral. Yeah. It was basically do something that makes the Dow Jones go up. You know, the investors get capital gains. They kick back with, you know, campaign contributions, either through themselves or the law firms or both, and around you go. You know, the Dow goes up and the campaign contributions go up, but the world gets so hyper-materialistic and gruesome. You know, it's very interesting because when you, I give you a perfect example. I was just tweeting out, Charlie Schumer did a rant about against the Supreme Court because he was defending abortion. And I pointed out, you know, a woman has autonomy as long as it gets fetal tissue for the pharmaceutical companies. But when they want to stick your kids full of, you know, a vaccine cocktail that turns their brains to mush with heavy metal, you know, but it makes the pharmaceutical companies money, then you don't want kids or parents to have autonomy. You know, you really have to, at this point, look at everything in Congress according to qui bono, who benefits, because it's gotten so gruesomely financial that it's hard for many people to fathom how bad it is.
Well, it's not hard for me to fathom it, especially when it comes to the Congress, because these are people who have to always raise money. I knew a congressman who went to jail, basically, because he kind of went off the reservation when it came to raising money, and he happened to get caught. They all go right off the reservation when they're raising money if they're in Congress. It would change the country profoundly if Congress had a 4-year term of office rather than a 2-year, which is a misfortune. But I want to get on to another subject, but before we do that, Free Dreamlanders, think about what you're learning today and how much more you would learn if you really dug into this wonderful website, unknowncountry.com. We'll be right back. We're talking to Catherine Austin Fitz, and speaking of websites, which I was just before the break, Catherine's website is really extraordinary, solari.com, and you can learn so much, even if you do nothing but go to the site and click on geopolitics, precious metals and currencies, commentaries, the Solari report itself. And if you engage, then you get even more. You can engage for free in the weekly email. You can get a subscription to the Solari report. There's all kinds of stuff you can do, and you can go deeper. This is very valuable and extraordinary stuff. So thank you again for being with us, Catherine Austin Fitz. Now, I want to go on, if I may, into something that was prominently featured in the December Solari report, which was ESG, Environmental, mm-hmm. Social, and Governance. Three factors used to measure sustainability and ethical impact of an investment. What is going on here? What does this mean?
Well, ESG screening is very old. In fact, when I was a little girl, I used to go to Quaker meeting, and the meeting that sort of was critical along with the Methodists in creating social screening because, the Quakers outlawed you couldn't make money in slave trafficking. So it was really the John Harding and the Methodists and then the Quakers who picked up on it and got this all going. But the idea is pretty simple. It's the golden rule that says, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And you just extend that to finance. Finance to others as you would have them finance unto you. The idea being if we all just stopped financing the practices that are destroying our planet, we'd get further down the road. And it's at the fundamentals of it is a very good idea, because if you look all around the world, you see people who are, thinking that they're ethical and moral, but then they're making money financing, the worst genocide on the planet. So this is really the notion was integrate your values into how your money flows. Now, what has happened is, several years ago, the people who engineered the financial coup decided to pick up on this and essentially weaponize it for capital control and weaponize it to white out the fact that they were destroying traditional financial disclosure with things like FASB 56. So essentially, after we've stolen $50 trillion, engineered it into a series of monopoly, the monopolies turn around and decide, we're going to use ESG to prove that we're bigger and better. And it's quite remarkable. I don't know if you saw that. We used JPMorgan Chase as a case study. And I don't know if you saw the chart we sent out with all of the settlements that they've engineered.
Yes, I did.
From 2002 on. Yeah, it's incredible. It's incredible because here you've got, if you just skim it, Whitley, what you realize is this company is a criminal enterprise. This is a mafia. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it is a criminal enterprise, and it surprises me because it doesn't, it doesn't look like one with all those great big buildings and people in beautiful business suits and everyone's so polite and so forth. And nobody is being dragged into an alley and shot, I don't think. But
I think they are. I think they are, but you just, it's layers on the covert side, so you don't see it. But if you go to, you can't, it's not open to the public, but if you go through their history and then you go to the website and you look at their social responsibility section, it's the most, you've never seen anything more fluffy in your life. What they did is they took some unbelievably brilliant creative public relations type and said, just make up whatever you want and say whatever you want about how wonderful we are. It's quite extraordinary. And the difference between the facts and what they claim in terms of social responsibility is enormous. Anyway, if you I wanted to write in the wrap-up that you just received, I wanted to write up a discussion of how ESG screening is being weaponized. Now, I do in my company, I have an investment advisory company, and I do ESG screening. And ESG screening is not easy to do. And I, one of the things I do is explain, you know, what are the challenges of implementing an ESG screen? And, you know, because it's different cultures have different values. And so what I might think is absolutely fine, someone in another culture wouldn't. It's funny, you know, one of the examples I use when I talk about J.P. Morgan Chase was usury. Because usury used to be illegal in this country.
Right.
And essentially, we've legalized usury in the most outrageous way. I mean, the usury in our culture, Whitley, is absolutely demonic. It's so bad. You know, so J.P. Morgan Chase has a 0% cost of capital, thank you, the Federal Reserve. You know, and the average credit card holder is paying 17 to 30%.
And yeah, I know it all too well.
The 10-year Treasury just traded through 1%.
When Ann was so sick, I had to use credit cards, and I still struggle with that debt to this day for that reason, because it's so high.
Right. It's unbelievably high. And very, you know, the entrapment that goes on, and I would say the whole healthcare system is, you know, is engineered to create that kind of entrapment. So anyway, so if you look at the system, it's extraordinary. I really believe one of the reasons we had the warrant error was it was basically a way to make war on all the people around the world who were opposed to usury.
That's interesting, because it's true that Islam is opposed to usury, very much so.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you can't, if you look at the financial, the one world government that Mr. Global wants, you know, one of the things they want with digital currency is, you know, worldwide usury, and the Muslims are in the way, as are the oil producers. If you look at who's de-dollarizing, it's essentially the oil producers teamed up with China. So that's part of what makes the Silk Road war so ugly is, you know, you got the pro-usury crowd trying to get control of the Silk Road and trying to electrify. The climate change op, I call it an op because it's really an op, is trying to get all the kids to help you electrify so you can cut out the fossil fuel guys because they're trying to de-dollarize. The climate change op is really at the heart laying the train tracks for the currency, and it's really a currency war because you want to electrify. You can put mind control and electricity and digital currency all on one quote-unquote smart grid.
And, you know, you have to wonder what the aim of all of this is, because power for power's own sake, or money for money's own sake.
This will give you the ability to run the world with AI and software so you can centralize control phenomenally and you can harvest everything. In other words, if you're looking to generate a dividend from planet Earth, this is how you optimize your dividend with no risk. You're basically creating a free-range slave state that will give you the ability to run everything with rules and AI and software.
Is there somebody who wants a slave state here who perhaps has motives that are not obvious to us humans? Or does that make sense to you?
I don't know. It looks to me like they just want to optimize the dividend with as little trouble and risk as possible.
It's all very strange because, you know, we've talked about enormous amounts of missing money. And what's most missing about it is its seeming complete absence from the economy. Because if those trillions of dollars were floating around somewhere in the world economy, there would be an effect. In other words, there would be things being bought and shortages of supply in different ways. But instead, that value is somewhere else. And
go ahead. We've had significant labor deflation on globalization offsetting monetary inflation. So I think part of the inflation offset came with the labor deflation. I also think that technology is hugely deflating. So we've been able in certain sectors to dramatically lower the material resources you need to make something. So we've had two really big deflation offsets. And I think one of the reasons for pushing the climate change up is, you know, you need a new round of deflation. The other thing is boomers getting aging, which they're doing in Asia, Europe, and the United States, is also hugely deflation. So there's a lot of different deflationary trends going on to offset the extraordinary monetary inflation. But I do agree with you, Whitley, the economy behaves much more like an open economy than a closed economy. There's no doubt in my mind that that's the case.
And how do you define open economy?
Open economy means we're trading with other civilizations, when we have investment flows with other civilizations, whether they're humans who live on the moon, you know, let's say the theory that the Nazis left and went to the moon and are trading there, you know, who knows? All I can tell you is it certainly looks to me like planet Earth is a REIT and we're paying a dividend and it's going someplace.
Well, exactly. That's my point precisely. And, you know, I'm going to have Richard Dolan back on this show soon. It's been too long. He's an interesting guy. I'm sure you know of his work.
Richard's been a wonderful, I was looking for all the money that was disappearing. And
yeah, that's
when
my point.
When I found Joseph and Richard, I found two people who on the asset side of the balance sheet could give me a logical explanation for what was happening on the financial side of the balance sheet. And as you know, I mean, Joseph's work has had a profound influence on me, and Richard's has as well, because they were I had tried many, many times to try and make sense of what was behind the national security state. And every time I tried, I would read just scores and scores of books, Whitley, and that's how I read many of your books. But I would just tear my hair out of it. I couldn't make sense out of it. And then I found Richard and Joseph, and it all started to snap together and make sense. And, you know, I still have a lot more questions than I have answers, but thanks to Richard, I was able to, you know, put my part of the balance sheet up against his and Joseph's part of the balance sheet, and things started making sense.
The fact is that there is something that is extracting value from planet Earth that we can't see.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right. And one of my questions is, you know, do we have civilizations off planet, whether they're human or otherwise, extracting value? But the other is, I think there's something interdimensional going on. So I'm a Christian. And I absolutely believe in Satan or demonic forces or demonic intelligence. And there is definitely something occult and demonic going on.
And with that, Free Dreamlanders, it is time for you to take a rest until next week. I'm sorry to say. Subscribers, we are going to go very deeply right now. We're going to take a deep dive in the direction of what may be going on and why it's going on, because we have arrived at last at the place I was hoping that we would go, and that is there's value being extracted in vast quantities from planet Earth. Nobody talks about this. Nobody understands it, but with her financial acumen, Catherine does. Free Dreamlanders, have a great week. Subscribers, just we'll keep on keeping on.
You've been listening to Dreamland. Be sure to tune in again next week. Dreamland is brought to you by UnknownCountry.com and its family of subscribers. Unknown Country was founded by Ann Streber. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our coordinator is Amy Safrankova. Whitley Streber is your Dreamland host. And I'm your announcer, Ted Alexander. Thank you for listening.